Today I'll be talking about my work on titled Operating System Should Manage Accelerators. This is work done jointly with my advisor, Professor Michael Swift. Nowadays, accelerators has become a buzzword in both architecture and system research community. So what are these accelerators? So accelerators are a specialized execution logic that are attached to a processor chip, and they can run certain tasks really well. For example, GPU specializes in running data parallel tasks, and tasks like encryption, decryption can be run really on a crypto accelerator. There are also accelerators that can accelerate specific code structures, like mapping a computation inside a loop onto a reconfigurable dicer block. Generally, the tasks are offloaded to accelerator, and they can finish the task by yielding a really good performance and also like high energy efficiency. So why is that accelerators are getting more focus now? There are two laws probably most of the architects here would be aware of. Moore's law says that the transistor count in a chip doubles every 18 months, and Dennard scaling deals with operating voltage of transistors getting scaled with the transistor size equally. In the time where both Moore's law and Dennard scaling were holding good, performance was achieved just by making a single core faster. But with the downfall of Dennard scaling, the issue of power wall came, and the single core processors were transformed to multi-core processors where the performance was achieved through more parallelism. So what changed now is that we are close to an era of dark silicon where we can have lots of transistors in the chip, but all of them cannot be turned on due to the power budget limits. Previously, we had accelerators for more common tasks, like having a floating point unit in the pipeline. But with dark silicon, what we can do is we can add accelerators even for less common workloads, and since the transistors anyway cannot be used to improve the general core performance. So it makes sense to build accelerators for different type of workloads, and since we can turn them on only when needed, and we can turn them off, thereby preserving energy. And the reason it is important is that the area which used to be really expensive before is less expensive now, and so we can afford to have all this specialized logic in chip, and thereby offloading tasks to them, and getting a good performance and energy efficiency. For example, the H264 ASIC, which can perform tasks at yielding a 250x better performance and 500x better energy efficiency compared to running the same task on a general purpose core. And another manifestation of the same power issue is that heterogeneous architectures where a single die can have cores with different capabilities. And each of these cores can be thought of as some form of accelerator which can run some sort of code really well. For example, a code with a high instruction level parallelism can run really well on superscalar core or out of order core. So we can think of this heterogeneous architecture also as like one variety of accelerators. There are many ways to build system which can have a different combination of accelerators, different combination of processing elements in them, which can run very different tasks really well. And there might be lots of heterogeneity in the future systems that will be built. So the real challenge here is for the programmers to figure out a way to write programs that can run across this huge diverse form factors. Our main work has been centered around this question: how can operating systems support this kind of accelerator-based architecture? First, we have got a lot of different ways of accelerating code. It is really hard to program each and every case manually, so systems should provide some sort of support to the programmers where the program can run on across this diverse heterogeneous architecture. Second reason, the same task can be executed in different processing elements. For example, a task can be run on a GPU, and the same task can be run on CPU cores. Now, the system should decide where and how to execute these tasks so that it can meet some application or system constraints. And third, some of these accelerators are going to be shared across the entire system. So multiple applications are going to get access to them. So it is the responsibility of the system to multiplex access among different applications to these shared resources as well. So this will be the outline for the rest of my talk today. First, I'll talk about how we classify the accelerators, and next move on to the challenges in integrating them with systems. Then I'll discuss about our model Rinnegan, and then finally conclude. So before jumping into classification, I just want to talk in brief about the IBM OSP process, which inspired some part of this work. Also, since some of the future process might look, accelerators might look like this, I just want to spend some time here. So the unique thing about the OSP architecture is that the accelerator units can be accessed directly by the applications. So it can be seen that the CPU cores on the left side and the accelerator units on the right side share the same system bus, which is named as the PBUS here. And also the memory controller is connected to the same system bus. So both the CPU cores as well as the accelerator units both have access to the memory controller. So the applications running on the CPU cores can issue instructions, which is present in the ISA, and thereby it can contact the accelerator units directly by passing the control message, whatever, along with the instruction. And the PBIC module, which is just below the accelerator units, helps the accelerators in interpreting the virtual address passed to them from the applications. So OSP architecture is just one form of accelerators, but in today's system, we can see like lots of different forms of accelerators. For example, floating point unit can also be thought of one form of accelerator. The AES instructions, the advanced encryption standard instructions, support in Intel and x86 cores are one form. And there are also separate crypto accelerators, which can be just connected onto a PCIe slot. So there are different types of accelerators out there. So in order to reason them better, we want to like categorize these accelerators. So one important way to classify these from an OS perspective is the way these accelerators are getting access. So the role that the OS plays in launching a task and using these accelerators. So based on this access category, we divided the accelerators into three types, which I'll be talking here. So the first is acceleration device. So acceleration device class can be thought of as a regular I/O device. For example, they can be either on-chip or off-chip. For example, the AMD APUs, the accelerating processing units, where both the CPU cores and the SIMD units are on the same die, so it's like an on-chip example. And a separate GPU, which can be connected to the system through interconnect like PCIe. So these are a few examples of this class. So the main thing here is that these devices are accessed through the device driver. So the driver takes responsibility in transferring data to these devices and also getting back the result back to the main application thread. It's pretty much the drivers which plays a big role in this class. So the second class is co-process style accelerator. So these are on-chip devices, but they can be accessed directly through the applications. For example, the IBM OSP architecture I just spoke of. So the main difference with the acceleration device class and the co-processor class is that we don't explicitly need to transfer data to the acceleration units. The third class is asymmetric cores, where the chip can have different cores with different design factors, like one core could yield a better performance, one can be designed for running at low power. So the accessibility and the data transfer in these cases are like any other multicore. So you just migrate the thread to the special core, and the data can be accessed through the regular cache coherency mechanism. So though the access mechanisms vary across all these classes, so acceleration device, co-processor, asymmetric, the way the things are moving around, data are moving around, everything is like different across this architecture. But there is one common issue among all these classes, which is the resource contention. So all these accelerator units can be shared across the entire system where multiple applications can access them. So these are like few of the differences and the common features that we want to show here in this classification. So the main takeaway point here is that the applications must deal with different class of accelerators with different access mechanism, and also the accelerator resources need to be shared among various applications in the system. So given these different class of accelerators, we find three major challenges in providing system support for them, and also making the application use all these kind of accelerators seamlessly. So the first, task invocation. If task can be executed by multiple processing elements, how to abstract the different possible execution. Second point is virtualization, where accelerators need to be safely shared among multiple applications. Finally, scheduling, where the accelerator need to be multiplexed based on some policy among these different requests. So the first challenge is the task invocation. So what is a task? So we refer to a simple function logic as a task. For example, encrypting a block of data can be a task. The main point here is that a task can be executed through different processing elements in present in the same system. For example, a parallel task, as I told before, can be run on a GPU. It can also be run on multiple CPU cores. Similarly, the encryption task can be computed using the AES instructions present in all x86 cores, or they can be offloaded to a crypto accelerator. So what current systems generally typically do is they statically decide where to run these tasks. So the task is affinitized to a particular execution unit even during the design time itself. So the drawback of all the static method is the very first point, it fails to capture application level factors like data granularity. So for example, if the amount to encrypt is like really small, we can just finish the task using AES instructions rather than offloading it to a crypto accelerator, because the setup time or the data transfer overhead itself is like really high compared to the actual execution time of the task. So the second point is it does not even know about the system constraints. For example, like the power limits, where it might not be possible to turn on all the CPU cores and the accelerators at the same time. Other example is that in case of new AMD Trinity APUs, where both the SIMD units and the CPU cores share the same power plane, so get a better performance of the SIMD units, we need to move the CPU cores to a low power state. And finally, there are also other factors like availability, where if the accelerator is being used by like a high priority application, other application doesn't get access to it. Or if the system doesn't, it does not have the accelerator, the application should still be able to run. So the second challenge is virtualization. So anytime we offload a task to an accelerator, we now have like a new piece of hardware running the actual application. So if we use virtual address to name the data, then somehow this virtual address needs to be converted to a physical address, which can be understood by the DMA controller or the actual accelerator. So in case of acceleration devices, the device driver does this job for us. So it converts the virtual address into physical address, or pins the data in memory, and then performs all this additional tasks for us. But for co-process style of accelerators, where the applications have direct access to the accelerators, this is not possible. So the system, so what happens is applications can it communicate directly, so it just like sends the virtual address to them. So now the system should be in some sense, like it should be responsible to make this virtual to physical address translation available to the accelerator units. So any translation faults occurring at the accelerator site should also be handled by the system. So this is like just a simple example to show this, where the CPU core can issue an instruction to contact the crypto accelerator. So that was just like a made up instruction. So the second point I want to say is it is possible for the main thread that actually issued a task to get preempted before the task gets completed. So now the system should be responsible to getting back this result and hand it over to the actual application. But in this case, we need more hardware support to establish this. The third and final challenge is scheduling, where requests from different applications need to be reordered based on some policy. This is similar to the case we do things with the current shared resources like disk or network. So rather than leaving this directly to the hardware, we think it makes much sense to do this in a software that is like the operating system. So that like we can have a scheduling policy that can provide a decision based on fairness or power efficiency, etc. Also, co-process style accelerators complicates this scheduler decision. It's because it is hard to intercept every call made by the applications if it have like direct access to accelerators, because we are introducing now like additional latency in between. So the latency to reach the accelerator is now increased compared to directly invoking the accelerator. Next, I'll talk about our model, Rinnegan, and how we solve all these challenges and other things. So the main goals of our model, Rinnegan, are with different processing elements possible with different systems, And the system should take an application where the application has like a bunch of tasks, and it should be able to decide at runtime where these tasks should be dynamically scheduled. And also, the system should be able to ensure global policies like minimizing power consumption or maximizing performance, et cetera. So Renigan tries to provide all these goals and also address the challenges that I described before through its components, accelerator, stub, agent, and a monitor. I'll be talking about each of these components now. So the first design point is the accelerator stub mechanism. So a stub is nothing but like an entry point to the accelerator invocation. Given that a task can be executed in different multiple processing elements, so the stub acts as a dispatcher trying to decide at runtime the different alternate implementation to choose from. So thus, in one sense, stub abstracts the multiple processing elements and exposes like a single interface to the application. And it also takes care of returning back the result from whatever application it chose from. So the stub is, in some sense, very similar to the RPC stub, where the RPC stub actually chooses to invoke different server based on some system factors. So similarly, the stub performs the same operation where it selects a different particular implementation of the task based on system or application factors, which we call it as binding. So binding can be done in three different ways. First, the static binding, where the actual decision is made during the compile time itself, which is mostly done in today's system. So this is not a very flexible approach where it demands the actual execution resource to be present in the system based on which the actual application was written so that the application can run. The second point is the early binding. In early binding, the implementation or the different from the different options, we pick one during the application startup itself. So this allows us to customize the application based on the architecture or any feature sets available in the architecture. But the drawback with this method is that it cannot really adapt itself to the runtime conditions. So the final point, late binding, where the actual different implementation is chosen during every invocation to the function. So this is like a completely flexible approach where it can take into consideration what is the runtime state and then decide to choose the implementation like based on that. So we would like to focus on late binding for Renigan, but the challenge is that every function call incurs some additional latency because you have to make this decision dynamically. So how do you overcome that decision is like a big question for us here. So next part is the accelerator agent. So agent is like a manager to a particular device. So each device will have its own agent. So it kind of acts as a middleman between the application and the accelerator as well. So the stub that I talked before demultiplexes different multiplication, whereas the agent multiplexes requests from multiple process onto a single device. So the main roles of the agents are, first, it needs to help in virtualizing the accelerator similar to a device driver. So all the challenges that I described before in the virtualization slide, like providing a virtual to physical address translation or handling the translation faults, the agent needs to help in this regard. It also needs to forward the tasks that obtain from the applications to the accelerator it manages, since each accelerator can have its own different access mechanism. For example, agent for asymmetric core can just migrate the thread to that special core. Agent for a device like GPU can forward the request to the device driver person. And agent for a co-process style of accelerator can act as a resource allocator, where it can assign the accelerator units to the application, and thereby the applications can directly access the accelerator. It's somewhat similar to a space multiplexing. The other things that the agent does is it is a part of a two-level scheduler that actually implements a scheduling policy, thus making the agent act as like a local scheduler for each resource. The final thing that it does is it should expose information like usage of the accelerator device it manages that can help us in achieving some system-wide goals. So the last design point is the accelerator monitor. So as the name suggests, it is like a system-wide service that monitors all the resources, utilization of all the resources present in the system. So in the two-level scheduling system, the monitor plays the role of a global scheduler, maintaining the global constraints like minimizing power or maximizing performance, whereas the agent is like a local scheduler. The monitor is able to achieve this by exporting the information actually exported by the agent, and it is able to send feedback to the application stub, which can then make decision during its runtime, the different implementations to choose from. So one more important piece in Rinnegan is a programming model. So at a very high level, the model for writing applications over accelerators should be something that exhibits task-level parallelism, where the task can be offloaded to accelerator and can run in parallel with the main application thread. And the model should support these following three stages in the lifecycle of a task. First is the way the tasks are written. So since the task can be written, task can be executed on different devices, the model in some sense should help to write, to get different implementations of each task corresponding to the different devices. The second is how to launch a task. So launching should be as simple as invoking a function. So even though you have like different implementation, these complexities should not be exposed to the programmers. Finally, it should be flexible enough to support both synchronous and asynchronous invocations. The model should support these things. So all these things can be supported in current programming models like TBB or SILC, which are primarily based on task-level parallelism. So the box here on the right-hand side shows a very sample code. If a code has been written on this model, this might look something like this. So the main application snippet or the function wants to offload a crypto task, so it calls the crypt stub and then does some computation, finally waits for the task. Meanwhile, the crypt stub, which is supposed to demultiplex across different implementation, so it has two different implementation. It can invoke two different implementation, like either running the task through AES instructions or like offloading it to a crypto accelerator. So based on some system factors, it does that. So just putting all these pieces together, the application invokes the corresponding accelerator stub for completing a task. Now the stub can choose an appropriate implementation and forward the request to the corresponding agent. The agent in turn takes care of incorporating the local scheduling policy and pushes the request to the actual device. So the meanwhile, the monitor keeps on watch on all the devices in the system and sends feedback to the application based on the system state. So this kind of results in like a feedback loop helping us to achieve the system-wide goals. So most of our work derived from like much past research work like frameworks like Merge and Harmony, which provide support for invoking different task implementation based on data granularity. Projects like GPU Ocelot, which can produce multiple implementations for the same task. So it specializes in producing code that can run on both GPU as well as CPU cores. And finally, works like PTask or Pegasus, which provides system support for scheduling devices like GPUs. So finally, to conclude, accelerators will be common in the future, and there are still open challenges that needs to be addressed from an OS perspective. Our system, Rinnegan, helps to provide some support here through its stub abstraction, and agent, and monitoring components. There are still other open questions like, how do you efficiently move data between multiple devices so that you avoid unwanted data copies? And also issues like power measurements needs to be handled from a system point of view. Thank you.